Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, what it means that more American kids are going to segregated schools. A new Associated Press analysis finds that charter schools are among the most segregated schools in America. When the AP examined enrollment data, it found that more than 1,000 charter schools of the nation's 6,700 are 99% of one race. Here in Minnesota, we have more than 200 schools where 90% of the enrollment is students of color, and those schools often lag in reading and math proficiency. Now, this analysis won't surprise my guests. Now, Liwe Rooks writes in her newest book, it is apartheid, a system that is, at its core, organized by physically separating racial groups and then privileging one racial group over another. So what do we do about this? This part of the discussion, and I hope you'll join in, if you teach in a segregated school or you have a child that goes to one, what do you think is being lost in opportunities for learning, both academic and social advancement? And if your child attends a charter school, is it predominantly single race? So if you teach in a segregated school, you have a child going to one, I'd like to know what you think may be lost in opportunities for learning and social advancement, or what is gained. And if your child attends a charter school, is it predominantly single race? Here's the phone number, 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. Talk to me about it on Twitter. It's at CarrieNPR. Naliwe Rooks is Director of Africana Studies at Cornell. She's the author of a number of books, including her newest, Cutting School, Privatization, Segregation, and the End of Public Education. And she's with us today from Ithaca. Naliwe, sorry for the late start here. Thanks so much for being patient. Really glad you could join us today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad you got there safe.
I did.
Made it sound really impactful, the storm.
Oh, yeah. First summer storm or winter storm and slow travels. So this AP analysis just out on Sunday is full of quotes from parents with kids in segregated charter schools who say, hey, my child is thriving. There's lots of cultural fluency. The teachers pay attention to my kids' needs more. Do you think their perceptions of what their kids are getting from those schools are distorted somehow, or does segregation work in some cases?
So I think that what often happens is individual parents, react to stories about the public school system as if their experience is the experience that is shared by everyone. It's absolutely true, and it has historically been true, that you can be in a single race environment and receive a great education. What the AP story makes clear, though, is that overwhelmingly, so not for those individual parents here and there who may say my experiences are different, but overwhelmingly, if you are in a single, a heavily racially or economically segregated school, you're not getting the resources and the results are not as high. So it's not that those parents are wrong, but sometimes what happens is parents find that their children in segregated schools in the 21st century, they feel that they're doing great, you know, that they're at the top of the class, they are performing well on tests, and there's so many stories of when those children, whose parents and the kids have a very high sense of their achievement levels, mm-hmm. Based on how they're doing, and they feel comfortable with the schools. When they go into more rigorous environments or more integrated environments, the numbers of times where they say, I didn't know, you know, I didn't know that, you know, my best in that environment was far from what's considered the best in the more competitive schools. And that's a harder question to tease out. So you're doing well compared to what?
So it sounds like you are saying if your child is succeeding in a charter school, that from the outside looking in looks segregated, perhaps you're succeeding in spite of what we know generally applies to segregated schools. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, what works, what we know from decades and decades and decades of research, what works to equalize opportunity gaps and educational gaps and test scores and college graduation, when all boats rise, it's integrated schools. That doesn't mean that they're only integrated schools that will ever work. But if you're talking about a systemic solution, something that you can apply across the country, not idiosyncratically, then it seems to me you need to start with what works for the most people.
Let me grab a call here from Terry in St. Paul. Terry, it sounds like you're an educator, yes?
Yes, I have been a principal in public, private, and charter schools.
What's your sense about what Noliwe is saying here about segregation and what this means overall for student achievement?
Well, you can look at it in many ways and come up with many examples of why actually they work or they don't work. I've been in schools in which more than 90% of the student population was from one ethnic group. But I've had experience in old parochial schools also, and many, particularly Catholic schools, were built around churches where children of that ethnic group, when they came to the United States, would go. And it was a transition and a workable transition. Ultimately, most of those families, you know, did go to public schools, etc. But it was a weaning process. And I really see it as a benefit for some in one way. But it does hinder sometimes exposure to other people and other ability levels, and also especially foreign-born coming in.
Okay.
They have to keep their own ethnic qualities, but they have to also understand that they have to deal with this environment here.
Okay. So, Terry, I want to go back to Noliwe on this. I think we saw indications of that again from parents when you looked at some of the responses that the AP got on their study. What do you think about that?
Well, I think...
I'm asking our guest, Noliwe. Go ahead.
As your caller is saying, I do think that it's true. So I went to Catholic school. I went to segregated all-Black schools, and I was in the fifth grade, had the experience of actually integrating what had been a predominantly white school, one of six Black children. I've had the experience of moving around socially in different environments. I think, though, one of the points that I often make about charter schools that wasn't in the AP article but may help to explain some of the data there is that segregated schools, for charter schools in particular, they make the most money when they have segregation levels of 90%. 90%, they call them 90-90-90 schools. So 90% of color, 90% struggling economically, and 90% below achievement levels. That's sort of the charter school sweet spot. That's where they go in and get the biggest growth and they maximize the most kind of profit. And so one of the questions I ask is, you know, as we are wanting to have a conversation about is segregation harmful? Can it be helpful? To notice that their whole businesses, though, whose business practice is keeping schools segregated, which is a separate question from can you educate children in a single race environment?
Call here from Mustafa in St. Paul. Hi, good morning, Mustafa. Thanks for waiting. What are you thinking about on this?
Oh, thank you very much. My name is Mustafa, and I am an educational justice nonprofit. We advocate equality education in public schools. Mm-hmm. So I work a lot of mainly East African parents organizing, you know, educational justice. So one of the key issues always is the charter schools. And I'm glad you guys have brought up this subject because a lot of things are failing. These charter school people who are running are really for profit. every single day I see parents complaining. Suspension is even worse than public schools. Above that, there is no educational. Some kids are sixth grader and they're reading second grade levels. Some are graduating high school and they don't know a lot of, and they cannot go to college. And their whole life they've been in a charter school. So majority are failing, and it's all about the profit. And especially East African parents are getting ripped off. So, but then we also have a few, like Hennepin Elementary, who performing at higher level.
That's right. So, I mean, there are some success stories, Mustafa, and I'm glad you mentioned that. I do want to say this, Naliwe. You write about the charter school movement, and you say, quote, it speaks primarily to the deeply frustrated desire on the part of Black parents for public schools to provide their children with a quality education. It sounds like you're saying you understand the interest and the move to charter schools by parents of color because they're seeing that the public schools are not meeting their kids' needs.
Right. There is no period in American history, at least, where I found that Black or Latino parents are not willing to avail themselves of any strategies. That if someone comes and says, we can educate your kids, we actually care about your kids, we will educate your kids. That you will get those communities will embrace that because of the frustration with traditional public schools. While it is true, as your caller pointed out, very often the charter schools don't do better academically than the public schools. One of the issues where consistently parents say, Black parents and Latino parents say, charter schools are better is around school safety and the safety of their children and the feeling that their children will not be in environments where, you know, they'll be picked on, there'll be fights, there'll be a certain kind of social disorder. So between safety and the potential, this is the potential that you will educate children better than what they're getting, better than what parents had. The consistently any. Strategies that say that they're going to address that, you will have high levels of interest from Black parents.
Naliwe Brooks is with us. She's a professor in Africana Studies at Cornell, and she's out with a new book called Cutting School, Privatization, Segregation, and the End of Public Education. We scheduled the conversation with her, and then the Associated Press came out with a new analysis that finds that charter schools are among the most segregated schools in America, which is what Naliwe has been writing about in the book. We're talking about why that is and what that means for the students and the parents in those charter schools and in those segregated schools, but what it means for the rest of us as well. I want to know, if you teach in a segregated school, you have a child that goes to one, is there something being lost in opportunities for learning, academic, social advancement? Do you think there are particularly upside opportunities for your child, that student, in a segregated school, particularly if it's a charter school? And if your child attends a charter school, is it predominantly a single-race school? How do you feel about that? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR, where Carrie says on Twitter, schools that are at 90% white are segregated as well. All segregation harms all racial groups, reducing achievement of all. Naliwe, you're probably aware of this, but I wanted to remind listeners that Minnesota has the widest achievement gap in the country. Students of color lag achievement measures by double digits. And this is something that Minnesota has been working on for a very long time. States investing as much as $75 million a year into closing the achievement gap. It's made very little difference. Charter schools were seen as a way to try to get at the achievement gap. And as noted, some of these charter schools have high achievement. I hear you here to say that's not the answer to Minnesota's achievement gap. Yes?
Right. The thing about Minnesota and many of the states who have invested quite a bit of money in or the things that I know about Minnesota, it very often it goes into strategies that have nothing to do with increasing achievement. I mean, again, as I said, one of the things that we know works is integration, but we've thrown our hands up at trying to achieve that. It's hard. You know, neighborhoods are separated. People don't particularly want to go to school with highly integrated populations, but anyone. You have economics thrown in there as well. You know, wealthy people just do not want to go to school with poor people. So the mechanism by which you achieve integration at this point, given all of that, makes it an intractable problem, makes it hard. It's a big one. You know, it's a big one for the nation. But in the absence of trying, in the absence of really saying all of these hundreds of millions of dollars that we've been spending, imagine if Minnesota spent $75 million a year to increase integration, something we know works. So you're not chasing after the next new shiny thing.
And I will say that Minnesota invests money in that as well.
And that, if that was the primary focus of what they wanted to do to close achievement gaps, as opposed to all the other things that you can run around and do, it might be that some of these really creative young people that in the 50 years since the last big experiment where we tried to integrate, that we'll come up with something that will work. But because we haven't really tried it, like we're running away from it, we try all kinds of other things. We put money into these other things like charter schools. And then throw our hands up and say, look, it's not really working. What should we do? What can we do? And we're not doing the one thing we know works. So that's the big point that I make. It is hard. But is year after year of these achievement gaps and kids not going to school, to college and dropping out and not doing as well. And like, that's not working either. So perhaps it's time for a big grand experiment in another direction.
Kimberly says, my third son went to a charter school. When I was concerned about his third grade reading levels, I was told he was right at grade level and nowhere near the bottom. Moved to public school next year. He was in an intensive reading program to catch him up, 99.9% white. And Isaac in St. Joseph's on the phone lines here. Isaac, what's your question or your thought here?
Yeah, sorry, and I probably missed some of the conversation when I was asking the question. But my question is regarding kind of white flight and suburbanization.
Mm-hmm.
And how that plays into segregation in charter schools and then as well as public schools.
Uh-huh. So your question is specifically about white flight heading out to the suburbs, what the impact is on that. Okay. Naliwe, what would you say?
Yeah, and
you were going to add, Isaac? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. And then, suburbanization as
okay.
well. Those two
I think we've got
factors.
It. Go ahead, Naliwe.
Yeah, nationally. So again, it's interesting talking to people about schools as I've been doing for the past years. We do see things from in our backyard, in either our historical education, like how we were educated, or you know what we're looking around at. The question of segregation is one that goes back to the mid '60s, and that really is one of the reasons that thinking about integrating schools is so hard from the 60s on, you know, for a whole host of factors having to do with the ability to buy homes outside of cities that were financed by the government, about cities becoming scary places, often with urban unrest. But you start to see a movement of whites from urban areas into suburban areas. And because they weren't part of the segregated schools, Jim Crow schools, schools that said, you know, up front, we will not allow any black and white kids to be sitting in a classroom together. You know, the government has not had much oversight in terms of diversity, in terms of segregation, because if there is a housing separation like that. And that's one of the things that has to be overcome. I don't know about Minnesota, but so many places, when people come up with strategies that are about bringing inner city kids, struggling kids into these higher suburban school districts, higher performing suburban school districts, very often there's a complete outcry on the part of parents, you know, who worry that disorder and crime and fighting will follow them, that the test scores will drop, that housing prices will drop. And there are concerted efforts to keep children out of those public schools that need it the most. So some of it is policy. Some of what keeps us separated is policy. Some is distance. And a lot of it, though, is just fear. It's fear of others.
Although one of the things that we've seen here is that with school choice options, parents of color are sending their students out of the schools in Minneapolis and St. Paul for the very perceptions that you've just talked about, out into suburban schools, away from that. I mean, they're making a choice to send their kids to schools probably with more white students and out of predominantly students of color student bodies. That doesn't surprise you, huh?
No, no, not at all. Like, again, if it's allowed, I mean, it's great, though, that that's working, that people are allowing that to happen. Because, again, in so many communities, the fears about how this will impact the test scores and ratings for the school, if you let in people who are not performing at as high a level, keep that from happening. But again, Black parents, people in Black communities want the best education for their kids that they can find.
Right.
And if that's in the suburbs, they're, you know, they will go there to get it. One of the questions that I ask, though, in my book is, for all of these folks who are spending millions and millions of dollars talking about educational reform, talking about, you know, rise of charter schools, more teachers who are alternatively certified like TFA. I know y'all have a virtual education component here to your education, which is rising and is really usually only prescribed for poor kids. One of the questions I'm always asking is the people who are behind this, who are saying this is a civil rights issue. These are the forms of education that will close these gaps. This is what we need to do. What they're prescribing are very, very different forms of education than what their kids get. You do not see private schools or wealthy schools, suburban school districts saying, you know, what we want are teachers who've only had 5 weeks of training over the summer. That's who we want to train our kids. Mm-hmm. That's who we want to teach our children. You just don't see it, and you wouldn't see it. You don't have in high performing or private schools that these ed reformers would send their kids to virtual education. Their kids are not sitting in front of computers 8 hours a day unbroken. From the age of five, not happening. They would not allow it to happen. The question that I have is, you know, as we sort of continually try to figure out, you know, what we can do in the face of what seems to be intractable segregation. You know, we are separated by race and economics in this country. Whole regions, whole cities, you know, look differently based on race and economics. If we just started with the simple proposition that the kind of education that the wealthy get, the best prepared get, the students who we have the most faith in as a country, the education that billionaires' kids get. If that's the education that we figure out how in a segregated environment to provide struggling children, I think we'd be farther along. But we always keep coming up with forms of education to address it, to address the segregation that bear no relationship for what wealthy people want for their kids.
So when you use the term grand experiment a couple of minutes ago, what is that, given the foundation that you've just laid there?
Well, the initial experiment, of course, was to say, I mean, in a country that had never had integration, that had never really grappled in the 50s, you know, never really grappled with the idea that you have whole swaths who don't vote, who can't sit in schools with others, who can't live together. For the Supreme Court to say, you know, we're going to go in a different direction, we are going to take the nation in a different direction, and we're going to make that kind of separation illegal. Everything that came after in the pursuit of integration really was a kind of grand experiment. We'd never seen it before. So how do you break down those years of biases and dis-ease and misunderstandings and hatred in some instances between races or between classes of people, between rural folks and urban folks. How do you start to break that down so that kids can sit in the same classrooms and thrive? And in the 20 or so years that we attempted different ways of doing that, putting children, taking them out of urban schools and putting them into boarding schools, different kinds of after school programs, like all the things that we have tried. That was a period of experimentation in a way. It was a grand experiment to see if we could right this ship, this integration ship. And it hasn't worked. Or it did work educationally where it was tried. It's the only thing that has made all boats rise. Everyone benefited when we actually legitimately tried it. And so in the absence of thinking that integration is still an answer for us, we've come up with all these other educational products that it is at least arguably, that just are not working.
Now, Leewe Rooks with us. If you've just gotten in on the show, she teaches Africana Studies and Feminist Gender Sexuality Studies at Cornell. And we're talking about her new book, Cutting School, Privatization, Segregation, and the End of Public Education. Dawn says on Twitter, as a parent of children in a local charter school, I think you're missing a major factor of charter school organization. Attendance is a choice parents are making deliberately, not something being imposed on them, she adds. Also, many local charter schools are allowed to organize to serve a specific racial identity. That is self-chosen segregation, a very different conversation than the one you're framing here. Actually, I think you've addressed that in a leeway, but what would you add to that?
Right. I do think that it's a choice, but it's a choice in the absence of other choices.
Uh-huh.
You are choosing to send your child to a segregated charter school very often because there are no integrated schools around. Charter schools specifically rise up to address neighborhoods and kids for whom other educational options don't exist. So, yes, you have chosen to send your child to a charter school and not to the traditional public school. But that's because there's the traditional public school, more than likely, is just not performing very well. The question then becomes, the last data that I saw across the country, of the 6,000, almost 7,000 charter schools across the country, there's about 20-25% nationwide that perform better public schools in the areas, about 25%, black 20, 22, 25. Let's call it a quarter. The other three quarters perform worse or the same. And there doesn't seem to be a great effort to address that imbalance. Like if charter school results were the inverse, if 75% were outperforming public schools and only 25% were underperforming, you know, then I could see the argument for continuing to expand them, for continuing to fund them, for closing traditional schools in order to expand those schools. But that's just not. That's just not what's happening.
So the answer to Dawn is parents may be making this choice, but they're making a choice perhaps without the full picture of how those charter schools that, as she notes, have organized around a specific racial identity are performing against public schools. Let me grab a call here from Kathy in St. Paul. Hi, Kathy. Thanks so much for waiting. I know it's been a while. What are you thinking about?
Well, first of all, I think you're the professor's correct. I am a parent who has two fabulous daughters who are black and incredibly smart. And I've got one in a public school and one, we chose a charter. We were probably, different parents in the sense that our first question when we were looking at charter for my middle school kid was how are you addressing the integration issue? And they actually were pretty honest, like, hey, we're low on this. It's something we're trying to work on because we know it's an issue. They also have really qualified teachers of color at the school, which was important for me. And probably the biggest thing, at least in that school versus the public school in for my child, and the public school was fine. It just didn't. There was an issue there of when I went to the public school, and my issue was, how are you addressing, you know, the greater issue in terms of middle school when you have smart girls of kind of falling off for science and math? And particularly, how are you addressing it for smart girls of color? And are you having that conversation, and are you aware of it?
Mm-hmm.
And quite honestly, the public school was like, what are you talking about? And the charter was like, yeah, we are. And that is why we picked that.
Mm-hmm.
I really struggled with it because I'm a public school person. I support public schools. I volunteer in the public school. I'm very happy with my other daughter's public school. But, you know, it was a sort of middle school issue. And I think I wish we were having the conversation about charter of there are inherent problems within the system and what we're doing. And that we don't have the same oversight. I think that
Kathy, I don't want you to miss the point, and maybe you didn't catch the beginning of the show when Naliwe was talking about, yes, there are exceptions and there are charter schools that perform well, but overall, and she's talked pretty in depth about the research, they don't perform as well as many of the white schools and the public schools. Naliwe, please add to that.
Right. And you made the choice. I mean, you really are the example caller. For what I'm saying, parents want what is best for their children, for what they see. If you are looking at a traditional public school and they say, we are not going to be able to educate girls or even understand smart girls what they need, and another option does, of course, that is what parents do. You know, they make the best choices. However, when you talk about the end of public education sort of as we know it and segregation was in this AP article saying that, you know, overwhelmingly or so many black children are in more segregation than they were in the 1960s, which is a startling kind of fact, given that what we know from the 60s is there are inherent social good in integration. The question becomes, so your choice for your child may work for your family, but it is a systemic unraveling of public education and of ideals of equity that have historically tried to bind us together. And those are hard because if you're putting what you want for your child against some sort of abstract notion about involving other people's children, it becomes hard for us to see, well, why shouldn't I go and get what's best for mine? But what the AP report that we started this conversation with and what my book is trying to point out, those choices that so many parents are making for the right reasons, you know, for reasons having to do with what we do as parents, are aiding and hastening an end to a public school system that addresses most of us. You know, that's something that's there for and funded by public taxpayer dollars. And it's time to have a conversation about that.
Kira says on Twitter, I'm a white parent of mixed race kids, and I chose to send my daughter to an intentionally mixed race charter school where I feel she's affirmed in her identity. Too often as parents, we have to choose between rigor and diversity in district schools, which is what you've been saying, Naliwe. I don't want to miss your chapter on what happened in Newark. I thought this was just fascinating. It's a really good, insightful analysis. So Newark had still has, I understand, a lot of public education school problems. Mark Zuckerberg comes in. And he pours millions into the public schools, and he does it on Oprah. And I've got a little clip from the Oprah show where he announces it. Let's listen.
I've committed to starting the Startup Education Foundation, whose first project will be a $100 million challenge grant.
$100 million.
Okay, so that was an experiment. What happens when you have a philanthropist come in and put that kind of money into the public schools system? What did happen?
Right. So it was one of these moments where everybody was pretty much sure. You had the governor, Chris Christie, the mayor of Newark, who's now a Senator, State Senator Cory Booker, and Mark Zuckerberg coming forward with this $100 million. And, you know, and it was a matching grant, as you heard. So you would get it after another $100 million was raised. So what was spent in a five-year period in Newark was close to $200 million. The thing, and it was supposed to show real achievement at the end of the 5 years, to show that, you know, with money and commitment and goodwill, you know, you could really pull up the whole district that was in state receivership at the time. It had been performing so poorly for so long that the state took it over in the 80s. So time goes on, and long story short, Zuckerberg, at the end of 5 years, you know, says, well, this was a real learning experience. I learned a lot with this whole experiment. But the children, it didn't really work. What happened was they shrunk the traditional public school system, closed hundreds of schools, aggressively expanded charter schools. They were aggressive about trying to shrink unionized teachers and bringing in more Teach for America type teachers, doing more with vocational education and with online learning. All mm-hmm. of the things that we are consistently seeing around the country, it was a real experiment. It was a distillation of all of it in one place with the money to make it work. At the end of it, there were more charter schools, but achievement levels were basically unchanged. All of the money ended up spent, and they had nothing, basically nothing to show for it. But they also had kept the community out. Most of the people making the determinations for what to do with the $200 million were from outside of Newark. They were consultants. They were, you know, corporate heads, boards, national organizations who did stuff with education. It was not the parents and community members and longtime activists inside Newark that had a say on what happened. But traditional federal policies, the ways that our government until Betsy DeVos said were the best ways to address the underachievement of poor children and struggling children, they did a lot of that and it didn't work. And yet we continue to fund the same kinds of experiments.
Now, Leeway Rooks's book is called Cutting School, Privatization, Segregation, and the End of Public Education. Really interesting discussion. Sorry, I had to cut it a little short there, Naluwe, because I was late. But thank you. I hope you'll come back for more discussions about education. Good to have you.
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you
Good.
So much for having
Good.
Me.
Good. We'll talk again. Want to let you know that tomorrow morning and for the remainder, let's say for the next week or so, we're going to take parts of this very complicated House and Senate tax bill and break that down to try to understand the pieces that will affect you. So a segment tomorrow on the mortgage deduction and what Congress wants to do with that. I hope you'll tune in for that.